Hello, welcome. This is a podcast. We still remember how to do this.
I spy Mrs. Christine.
That's me.
How is Mrs. Christine?
Mrs. Christine is not bad.
It's been so long.
It's been a while. It's been a busy, busy summer.
Hello, listeners. Hello, everybody.
Yes.
Oh, I've missed everybody.
Have you?
Yes, we have much to discuss.
Well, we do. We went to see some actual real-life F1 cars.
Proper engines?
Yeah.
Going around a proper track. It was only testing, it wasn't racing, but my goodness, wasn't it good?
It was loud.
It was fantastic. I loved it. We have talked so often, so frequently on this show about the how much we dislike the fact that in-season testing vanished. It was taken from under our noses. We've been to Silverstone Test before. It's a very cost-effective way of getting up close and very personal with Formula One machinery without paying the exorbitant costs of a Grand Prix weekend. What did we pay in total for the pair of us to go? We had tickets for 3 days of testing, didn't we?
Yeah, I think it was, I don't know, for both of us, probably about 70 quid. But what I thought was most amazing was that we had access to about half the track, maybe a bit more than that. You could come and go from all the grandstands as you pleased. And there weren't that many people there. I don't know if it's because there hasn't been testing for a while, so people have forgotten how it works and that you can actually turn up. But because there weren't many people there, you really could sit anywhere in any grandstand. You could see from any point around the half of the track that we were allowed on. It was pretty amazing.
We had the run of Silverstone.
We did.
And my goodness me, wasn't it good? It was beautiful. It was three boiling hot British summer days, the best weather you could possibly imagine. It was almost, you could perhaps say it was a fraction too warm.
Well, I was going to say that I was surprised that I was at Silverstone and A, it wasn't raining, and B, I was wishing it was slightly less hot. Mm. I mean, thinking back to when I almost died, having been frozen at Silverstone, sitting in wind traps at various points around the circuit, this was incredible.
And we saw there were actual race drivers testing cars. There were third drivers and there were up-and-coming rookie drivers, young drivers, and perhaps drivers who would never race in Formula One but were there for the ride nevertheless.
Yeah, I think because we were going to go anyway. As soon as they opened up tickets, we thought, yeah, we should go along to that. And then they opened it up to all the race drivers or some of the race drivers as well, which just was a bonus.
Mm. I mean, we are not outdoor people. It takes an awful lot to motivate us to get up and leave the house, but we couldn't come back on this show in all sincerity after complaining and bemoaning the loss of testing and then miss that opportunity. We couldn't, we could not skip this event. And my goodness, I'm glad we went. We only actually managed two of the 3 days because we were going outside wore us out somewhat. This is the kind of thing, if you didn't manage to go, if you're in the UK and you didn't manage to go to this, it's understandable because it wasn't terribly well advertised. It was a last minute thing, I think, that FOTA organised or lobbied for.
Yeah, so actually I have to take it back. What have FOTA ever done for us? Now they have done something.
They organised testing at Silverstone.
There you go.
Unusually, the teams were running out of the old pits. We did get to see the new Silverstone wing for the first time, the brand new complex, but teams weren't running from there. They were back in the familiar Silverstone.
It did take me a long time to get my head around the changes because we haven't been since they messed everything up. And I really...
Silverstone would say improved.
Oh, yeah, my bad. And because they were running out of the old pits, it was so familiar that I just love that bit so much. I don't want them to go back to the new bit. They should always run out of the old pits.
No. Well, the new wing, the thing that really stood out for me was, and it's clearly a very sensible and intentional decision, is from the roadside, if you were a passerby, if you were just a member of the public not visiting a racing circuit, the Silverstone wing stands out a country mile. I mean, it is vast and it is right on the public roadside. And you can see, I would guess the main decision to move the pits down that area of the circuit is because it's very, very visible to anybody who happens to be passing, not just race goers or people interested in motorsport. It very clearly says Silverstone in gigantic letters and it towers over the public roads. And I think that's a very wise strategy from the Silverstone organisers because it looks like a really big and imposing and dramatic place just to anybody who happens to be in the area.
The wing is visible, the pits not quite so much.
They sink. Mm. Yeah, they do disappear. As a spectator, I can see why people were complaining in previous seasons. There is a certain dip. And beyond that level, you cannot see anything. But you get a clear view of the media center and the grandstands. There are some design flaws, but you can see there's some very clever thinking gone into Silverstone. We have complained at the lack of investment. We've complained endlessly about the mismanagement of traffic in the past. And you can see, as we wandered around the area, you could see where the money's been spent. The money has not been spent on car parks. And they were lucky. Organisers were lucky at the Grand Prix this year. They were lucky with testing. There was no problem with any of the car parks because the UK has been dry. But you do kind of think that they are living rather dangerously when essentially they've still got green fields.
Well, they said they had plans in place and we didn't get to test that. So maybe they do. Maybe they do have strategic plans.
We could see the overflow car parks. They haven't. They've not actually done what needs to be done. But, you know, good for them. They're invested in the future of Silverstone. It looks like a really happening place.
It's progress, at least. And we're not seeing that at many of the European tracks because no one has any money. So at least somewhere is getting a bit of investment.
Mm. And we had a good time. We saw lots of cool stuff. We didn't see Miss Susie Wolf make her testing debut. That was on Friday. That was the one thing I think I probably missed out on.
Yeah.
We saw Borda Rester put in plenty of laps in his Force India. We saw a couple of people, was it Robin Frins? He had an off. We didn't arrive in time to see Ricciardo throw his debut Red Bull test away.
Yeah, well, like crazy people, we kept arriving midday at the heat of the sunshine and the humidity. But yeah, he was having his big moment in the Red Bull, his first test, all the pressure, all the headlines. And yeah, he binned it.
He did.
It was a bit embarrassing, but I don't think anyone judged him too harshly for it.
Did we learn anything from testing? What did we take away from it? Apart from the fact we had a fantastic fun time, did we actually glean any information? Are we wiser because of the testing?
No, not really.
There were no tyre disasters. I guess that was the only, that was the important thing that needed to be taken away from the test.
I think what was really clear was there was a lot of confusion about who could drive when, because they introduced this race drivers could appear, but only if they did tyre testing and only on certain days and things. And everyone got very confused. No one knew who was going to be there. Kimi Raikkonen was supposed to be there on Friday and then they decided he wasn't going to be there. And lots of fans were very upset because they'd only booked tickets to see him and he wasn't there. And yeah, it was, I think it was very indicative of the knee-jerk thing that has been going on with this tyre situation. But apart from that, I mean, some drivers were fast, some were slow, some got their debut, some were there for the millionth time. There were lots of miles completed, but I'm not sure that much was learnt, not by the fans anyway. It is the summer break and we are halfway through the 2013 season, so it seems like it's obligatory to do a mid-season report, analyse how all the teams are doing, and we thought, why don't we do that as well? So we're going to run through the teams quite quickly and just see how we feel about them at the moment. And I couldn't decide what order we should go through them because standard orders are, you know, the championship order or the entry list order. And that all seemed quite boring to me. So what I did was put their names in a hat and I'm going to draw their names out of a hat and then we'll talk
about
them.
Right. Any particular hat?
It is a Formula One hat.
Okay. Any particular team?
No, it's just Formula One in general because I didn't want the hat to be favouriting any
understood.
Of the teams.
Is it it's Bernie's hat then?
It's Bernie's hat.
Okay, how exciting. Will I be drawing?
You can draw if you want. I have a hat with names in.
I would love to make the first draw for today's discussion. And the first team we will be covering on this Feet Up Friday is...
Drumroll.
Force India.
Force India.
That says farce.
Does it? You can't read my writing.
It says force. Right. Where do we start with Force India? They shone so bright at the beginning of the season. There were question marks over whether they could keep up the pace. And it looks like the changes that Pirelli have been forced to make have hurt Force India more than anybody else. A team who aimed so high and yet have fallen so far in recent races.
Yeah, they were doing better than I thought they would be in the first place. So now it feels like where I expected them to be. But that is obviously a disappointment to them.
It's a major disappointment because this was a change that was out of their hands. They've not done anything especially bad to their car. They've not gone down a development route that they've not gone down a rabbit hole and got things wrong with their aerodynamic changes. Effectively, the tyres that were working so well for them at the beginning of the season have now changed. so significantly that right now they, well, certainly within the last two races, they had nothing like the pace advantage during the race that we have seen or had seen up to that point.
There was a worrying moment at the last race in Hungary where Sutil came in for a pit stop and the pit stop got a bit bungled and then he retired from the race anyway. And it was a bit like how it was with them earlier in the season where they couldn't quite get their pit stops sorted. But I don't know if it was specifically the same problem. But seeing a Force India stuck in the pit lane is never a good time.
They have reliability issues. But given the budget that this team have, given that they're effectively racing with a fraction, you know, they're up there with the front runners, running on a fraction of their budget.
Still ahead of McLaren as well, which is
amazing.
Amazing. The teams do have to take at least 2 weeks off in this four-week break. And that means there isn't very much in the way of news over the summer gap. But what I thought would be interesting was just to have a peek at what is the summer break non-news, because some outlets do need to fill those headlines, keep those stories coming, and they do try and make news from nowhere. So for Force India, so far, over the last couple of weeks, we've got De Resta thinks the team have slipped in terms of performance, which
he's right.
We knew. And Sutil isn't sure whether he wants to race in Formula One next year or not.
Oh, hold on. He's not sure if he wants to, or he's not sure if he's going to be able to.
Well, maybe I was being a bit optimistic about that. He's saying he doesn't know what the future brings. Quote, there are some interesting seats available, but it depends on certain drivers moving and then the carousel turns. It's a bit too early. And he says he is loyal to VJ first and foremost. So
you're wishing him out of Formula One for next year. Is that what you're saying?
I might have done that by accident.
I think Adrian Sutil has won me round this year. Is he not with you? You would expect him to have lost. You see Michael Schumacher make a comeback after taking some time out. Rubbish. He came back with no pace. He basically lost the plot behind the wheel. Adrian Sutil comes back. He's got faster in his break. That's a good thing. I think Adrian Sutil's done a fine job. Paul De Resta, we know he's a fast guy. The car's been decent. Both drivers have got almost the maximum out of that package. And I wouldn't be disappointed if that pairing returned to Force India next year.
Let's pick another name out of the hat. Here you go.
Oh, Bernie's hat, what will you deliver us today? And the second team under discussion is Williams.
Williams, oh dear. That's, yeah. It's not getting any better for Williams, really, is it?
They got their first point.
Yes.
So technically...
Okay, then technically it's getting better.
It's the smallest possible improvement that one could ask for.
And mostly by luck. More than any specific.
Essentially, because Force India have lost so much pace, Williams gained that one point. I think that's what happened, and that's the difference. That tipped the balance in Williams' favour. They seem to be able to handle the tyre change. It hasn't affected them as directly, as far as we can see. I did catch in non-news, have you got some non-news for Williams? Because I think I caught Claire proclaiming Bottas' excellence.
Spectacular is the word.
That was the word.
That is in my summer break non-news.
Which is, it's, yeah, you know, we saw him qualify in third, I think, for Canada, which was amazing, incredible achievement. And the guy's been doing a pretty good job.
I am growing to like him more and more, but I'm not sure spectacular is the word I'd use.
Well, we haven't seen everything the guy's been doing. He had that one shining moment, and in the race he dropped back out of the top 10 within about four laps, which was unfortunate. But it was enough to boost the team. I mean, it gave the team a major morale boost, which is important. And he seems to have grabbed Williams by the scruff of the neck and pulled them forwards in their times of trouble. When you have Maldonado saying, this car's not as good as last year, it's a bit rubbish, I can't do what I was doing, no, you know, don't expect me to win a race this year, it's hopeless. And you've got Bottas just
getting on with it.
Putting his head down, ploughing on. And yeah, I think he's done... I haven't seen enough to say spectacular. Claire has the stats. She has the data. She can compare the two drivers. They know how bad their car is.
Claire also said, well, she was defending their continued attention on this year's car because obviously it's rubbish and people are starting to turn their attention to next year. But she said that focusing so much on 2013 isn't hindering their progress. She actually said next year's car is... bubbling along. It's bubbling along nicely, which is just a phrase I like as opposed to the spectacular one, which I didn't think was quite so good.
That's probably how it's going to race too. Give me another team. Get me out of this hole.
The Hat of Wonder.
Hat of Wonder returns, and we have got, this time around, Upside Down Sauber. Upside Down Sauber.
Upside Down Sauber. Mm,
that sums it up nicely.
Well, Sauber were saved by the Russians. I can't remember whether we've talked about that or not. They were basically saved by the whole of Russia. And since then, ever since then, me and lots of other people that write things on the internet have been saying now they can turn their attention to what's going on track. And, yes. Well,
financial stability, important. Huge influx of cash, major win for Sauber, except have they or haven't they got this money?
Well, there are reports that they haven't, but they issued a statement saying that it's fine, the deal is still on.
Oh, this is a classic Formula One non-news story.
Yeah.
The deal that we didn't know was off is definitely still on.
That is definitely summer break non-news. But they may not have the money yet, so it could still be too early for any influx of cash or support to be making a difference, I guess.
One would assume it would depend on whether they were expecting the money yet, as to whether or not it was a problem. Whether or not it's a problem that they do or don't have it. It's a lot of rumours, a lot of speculation. I, for one, hope that they've solved their precarious financial position. Because I like Sauber, I think they did a grand job last year. An impressive season in 2012. And, well, it's been nothing but a disappointment this year. There's, unlike Williams, they haven't had the fine qualifying performance or any standout drives to really, you know, grasp hold of and motivate them. You know, that's what they're lacking. They've fallen down the order and people keep leaving. That's what's happening at Sauber.
Other news reports, I say news in the lighter sense of the word, Hulk says they haven't stopped working on this year's car just yet, so there could still be things to come. And the team are backing Esteban to get a point any day now. It could happen.
Really?
It might happen.
He hasn't looked like he's been in any danger of troubling the points. I haven't seen anything from him that would suggest that was an imminent expectation. But maybe, you know, maybe if they don't lose out from these Pirelli changes, if they manage to capitalise on them in the coming races, you know, a point's possible. Let's not count him out yet. He's definitely had a struggling opening introduction to Formula One. He's not had much testing. He's not had much time behind the wheel. He's definitely doing all of his learning in public, which is incredibly hard. So let's give him a chance.
Isn't Bottas in the same situation there?
Williams better prepared Bottas. I mean, they didn't do the same job that McLaren did on Lewis Hamilton, but they gave Bottas a great introduction prior to this year. They've got more resources to do that. Esteban, essentially, they gave him the keys to the Sauber and said, take it out, you know, drive it out the garage and,
see what you can do.
On your way, lad. Sauber should be brought the question over why they don't have a better young driver program, or why he wasn't given the hours in the simulator.
Yeah, well, earlier in the season when Manisha said, don't be too hard on Esteban because he's doing all his learning in public. And now at this point, it's like, well, actually, we're going to be hard on Sauber for that.
Because you shouldn't put a driver in
it's
that position.
Not
unless
fair.
It's absolutely necessary. They do need the money because they lost Perez. So they had no choice but to bring him in. But they knew that long enough in advance to give him more time. Notably, Sauber missed the opportunity of running Esteban at the Silverstone test. We saw Hulk, we saw Friends, and we saw the other guy, Sato.
Sato. Not that one.
But no, not him. But no Gutierrez.
Yeah, well, I guess
that seems like a missed opportunity.
If you only had a limited amount of tyre testing with your race driver, you might want to put the more experienced one in there. But then on the flip side of that, it would have been good for him to get some extra time in the car. So, you know, it's all decisions,
it's
isn't
a trade-off. Give me another team. Fourth team out of the hat?
I can't remember. Do you want me to count them?
I think it's probably the fourth team out of the head is Red Bull.
Oh, joy.
It's the fastest team out of the hat.
Yes. What can we say about Red Bull? They're still on top.
Nothing changes.
Nothing changes. Webber's still leaving.
Have we discussed that? Has that come up? We've talked about Webber.
We definitely have. He had a good stint on Top Gear. Where I thought he was surprisingly diplomatic when Clarkson asked him whether he was going to miss his teammate. Because Webber is not known for being diplomatic. He's one to speak how he finds it.
And his response was?
His response was like, probably not. That kind of thing.
He didn't take the opportunity to slag Vettel off then. But he did manage to beat Vettel's time.
He did, yeah. He was very happy about that.
It's probably the only thing, the only morsel of credibility that Webber can take from this teammate fight, I think. I mean, Vettel has owned him in every way, shape and form, and continues to do so this year.
It's interesting that you should say that, because my summer break non-news for Red Bull was that Christian Horner, I think he might have been trying to pay Webber a compliment. I think. It's hard to tell, because what he said was, people think Webber is rubbish because Vettel has overshadowed him, but actually that just shows how good Vettel is. So I think that's a backhanded compliment, saying that Webber is good so that Vettel is even better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite hard to tell.
I mean, Webber is better than I expected him to be, say, 5 years ago. But he's still nowhere near Vettel's level. And the guy's peerless. I mean, look, you know, the results speak for themselves. The pace speaks for itself. In qualifying, you wouldn't want to bet against him. I mean, Mercedes have the fastest.
Well, you would at the moment.
Over one lap. But essentially, you know, he's still the man. Situation normal. It's disappointing from a championship point of view and from an excitement point of view. And, you know, many people, myself included, slightly fed up of seeing him always at the top. And I noticed the guy's getting booed at more and more races. I think every single race, this every time he's on the podium this year.
I always feel bad because it's not good form. But then at the same time, it is understandable.
It's Schumacher-esque domination. I mean, the guy gets booed when he's on the podium. He gets booed when his car breaks down. He's getting it from all angles. But at the same time, you know, with success, that's what you
comes
get.
Comes great responsibility.
The car, yeah, I mean, Red Bull have got exactly what they want from the Pirelli tyres now. This is what they were petitioning from the first race. They should now have the package. They should now be able to work their package to the level they want to. Aside from missteps like we saw in Silverstone, it's going to be a massive challenge for anyone to overhaul them before the end of the year.
Yeah, and it's disappointing because at this point, they are catchable. It would still be a challenge from here, but they're only like a couple of race wins ahead of everyone else.
Except the regulations have swung in their favour.
Exactly.
That's the thing. They managed to keep ahead of everybody when things were working against them. What are they going to do now? Now it's all going their way. I don't want to be defeatist, but I just don't see that Constructors' Championship going anywhere else this year. Vettel's on course. I mean, he has to. It just seems so unlikely right now.
4 out of 4 for both of them.
Shake up your magical hat of mystery and...
magical hat now.
It's... what I'm thinking, if it's Bernie's hat, if I put my hand in here, surely I should draw it pound notes. Is that how it's going to work? It's not a pound note, there's another piece of paper, and on this one it says McLaren.
Oh, McLaren.
Mm.
So the big upswing we were expecting from McLaren, that never came to fruition, but...
Were we expecting a big upswing from McLaren then?
Well, I was. I thought they were going to, you know, develop their way out of trouble like they always do, and that never occurred. But they do seem to be making tiny little steps forward. They've had a couple of double points finishes, a couple in a row.
Yes.
That's always a good sign.
So right now, you mentioned previously that Force India remain above McLaren, but... On the evidence of Hungary, you're expecting that balance to shift.
Well, the gap has closed up. I think it might just be 2 points now.
Okay.
I think McLaren are having a bit of a resurgence, but not a massive one like we might have been expecting.
No, has there been any non-news, non-summer news from McLaren? I haven't heard very much from the team. They seem to just have they seem to be keeping quiet and getting on with the job of making the car faster.
Yeah, well, they did say that they think last year's car flattered their performance. So they're trying to say either last year's was rubbish or that this year's isn't as bad as
flattered. Okay. They want. So we assumed that car was a perfectly good benchmark and they would build on it. And what they were actually saying was
last year's was not good as well.
The drivers outperformed that car.
Yeah.
Is interesting.
Button thinks that Spa will be better for them as a team.
Okay. And they've got some good... I mean, if that's the kind of circuit that favours them, then Monza too presumably is going to be another good one. And perhaps Suzuka, if they're saying that the fast tracks are...
Yeah, possibly. But then you're headed to some of the hotter tracks as well, which might not be, because Spa is not necessarily as warm as, say, the desert.
Oh, so when he says he's favouring them, he thinks the weather maybe? That could be interesting. Okay. I don't actually have much else to add to McLaren. It's been a disappointment. We don't expect anything from them, but Tuned has been worse.
I was just going to say, the only other thing to say is that they've ruined Tuned, the whole historical thing. It's fine if you like that kind of thing, but it's not the great stuff that it was.
It doesn't matter how bad their performance on track is. Their performance off track is so much worse.
Yeah.
Give me another team. Da-da-da. It is.
Oh, I like your little fanfare.
It's, you know, I'm trying to build this up.
I'm building up,
you know, it's your magical mystery hat. Right. Marussia.
Well, if we didn't have much to say about McLaren, I've probably got even less to say about Marussia.
God forbid. They've lost Pat Simmons. It's got to be a big discussion point because they are right now ahead of Caterham. Am I correct? They managed that with early on in the season. They've retained that position. And I believe, or I assume, that the reason that they've managed to do that is largely down to Pat Simmons, who is a bit of a legend.
Well, he was their consultant, so it's hard to say exactly what he was doing.
But he brings an awful lot of Formula One experience to a very small team. I mean, normally, under normal circumstances, the Marussia team could not expect to win someone of the calibre and talent of Pat Simmons over to their team. No chance. And it was never in doubt that he would move on once he was able to return to the
Formula
One.
It would have been slightly nicer if he'd have accepted a position there first, just for a bit, just to say thank you.
Rather than the day he was allowed back in the paddock, he just, bye.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm off.
You'd assume that when they interviewed him for the position, that came up.
Yeah.
That was like, I will be here and I gratefully accept this position, but I'm not going to stay here. This guy oversaw Alonso's back-to-back championship wins against Michael Schumacher. He is a, despite his misdemeanors, a strategic.
He's a cheat.
He is a legend in the Formula One paddock. And I have no doubt that he will be missed at Marussia, because where they are now has to be in large part down to the work that he's put in and the knowledge that he's imparted on them.
But interestingly, in the non-news, Jules Bianchi says he wants to stay at Marussia next year. Because he thinks that the team will be a good place to be. They've got a new engine, all the regulations are changing, obviously. A little bit of consistency, that's what he wants. Which I'm surprised at, because he did put in such a good start of the season. He would probably open doors for himself elsewhere.
After the first two or three races, I genuinely didn't expect to see him at Marussia at the end of this year. Because I thought somebody would say, well, that's a star in the making. We could do with some of that. And as much, you know, I've given Pat Simmons a lot of credit for their performance, but actually Jules Bianchi is brought a lot of pace to Marussia.
It's tailed off a bit. And also he is flattered by Max Chilton's performance, because he may as well not be there.
That's true, but at times he was ahead of the Caterham. And you wouldn't expect with the finances and the infrastructure that Caterham have, and the engine that Caterham have, you wouldn't expect Marussia to be mixing it with them, and he's managed to do that. So I'm surprised. I'm surprised that Bianchi's made that decision this early.
A little bit of loyalty for Marussia instead of people just disappearing the second they can.
Pat Simmons was a bonus for Marussia. You know, they've got to embrace him and go, wow, you know, that's incredible that he's available for us and we're going to take him on board. So same with Jules Bianchi. You know, they had, before Bianchi was parachuted into the team, was it Gonzalez who was going to be driving for them this year?
Yes.
Who? You know, I mean, he's just not, I don't actually know what his background is, but he's not Bianchi's. He's not Bianchi's level. He's not that kind of caliber of driver. So they're lucky to have Jules. And I'm amazed that he's happy to stick around. I would have thought he'd be moving up to Sauber or somewhere beyond that.
Let us move on as well. Huh, good link. Stretching
me
out the hat.
Another one from you then. Who have we got this time? Let's go with Toro Rosso.
Toro Rosso. Well, yeah, they are going to lose one of their drivers, probably.
Do you think Ricciardo's going to Red Bull?
I don't know.
Is that the way it's going to be?
They're making such a big deal about it.
Who are?
People. Just generally. It's going to be so embarrassing if he doesn't get the seat.
It would be very awkward now, actually.
Yeah.
If they gave the seat to... Well, if Red Bull give the Webber seat to Raikkonen, you can kind of see them overlooking Ricciardo. But if they give it to anyone else ahead of Ricciardo,
that's embarrassing.
That's pretty much the end of him, isn't it?
But if he doesn't get that seat, is he just going to be happy to stay at Toro Rosso for another year?
He must be happier than Vern.
Well,
because at least he knows he is the favoured one of the two. He got the test at the Grand Prix, and Toro Rosso have already said, we don't mind keeping Vern for another year.
Yeah, but you know, Vern went way up in my estimation for a little bit and then he fell right back down again because he was being gentlemanly about it and saying, yeah, I think that, you know, if I can't have this role, then it should go to Ricciardo. He really deserves it. But
nice.
Then he sort of went a bit too far and was like, yeah, I don't think I'm really ready for it. And I can see why they've gone for him and stuff. And
really?
You just shouldn't be saying that. You should be bigging yourself up. Like drivers, all drivers are supposed to think they're the best out there.
I did catch something. Did he say he felt that he was inconsistent and that inconsistency has worked against him? Which I hadn't particularly spotted until he pointed it out. And no, you don't want to be highlighting your flaws to the world.
Yeah.
If you've been overlooked, you want it to be because the other guy is extremely he's a Superman, and you know you can't possibly compete.
Well,
with
he started out like that. I can, if they have to pick someone, I think it should be Ricciardo, not Kimi Raikkonen. And I can understand why they didn't pick me because I am not very good. Oh, Vern, man up.
Well, at least Toro Rosso see the potential in him in order to keep him around, because they have had in the past a tendency to just to drop drivers by the wayside.
That's true. And that is good news,
you know,
for him.
If Vern wasn't the man to step up to Red Bull, they could have easily said, well, stuff it, we'll bring someone in for next year. But what they're actually saying is there's a chance that Ricciardo might fail when he steps up, so we'll keep Vern around as a
super
your
backup
sub. Vern, I guess. Well, I don't know, reading between the lines, because there's no guarantee. You put Daniel Ricciardo into Webber's seat, he may not, you know, he may do a worse job than Webber. It might be too, you know, he might be too quick for Vettel, and then he might, you know, that might be the opposite effect. If he's that good, it might cause a disturbance within the force.
Yeah. The non-news from Toro Rosso over the last couple of weeks is Ricciardo reckons the added pressure and attention on him is a boost to his performance, which I think was clear because is it the last four races he's qualified in the top 10, which is quite impressive in a Toro Rosso.
But then he's been beaten by Vern in the race.
Yeah. I think we had this conversation last time that Vern's race craft is better.
But that's where the points are.
Yeah.
Give me another team. Are there any left? Yes, there are.
There are a lot of teams, aren't there?
This is going to be a long show. You didn't. Ferrari, make it a fast one. Ferrari.
They need to do that.
That was more of a request. Make it a fast one, Ferrari. Give us something to watch.
Yeah, I mean, they've dropped to third in the championship, which can't be ideal because winning is everything to Ferrari. Massa is worried about his seat for next year. Even he admits that he's not so good.
The same conversation year after year.
Every time. And the team were happy for this summer break so they can work on improving their car. That's all I've got.
Car/wind tunnel.
Yeah.
Which is still a disaster. How hard can it be to calibrate one wind tunnel? Seriously, you're using the Toyota one in Cologne. You've got a benchmark. You've got a car and you've got all the sensors that you were running in testing. So you've got that benchmark. Just make that match the goddamn wind tunnel in your own back garden. It literally is in their back garden. Just how hard can it be? I know aerodynamics is incredibly difficult science, but this, you know, there are already however many wind tunnels there are in the world. They're all fine. Every other team seems to be okay. The Ferrari one must have been working for whatever, you know, however many years. It can't be a new thing that this tunnel has lost its calibration. Just fix the damn thing.
Of course, it must be bad because we've had a big storm in a teacup with Alonso criticising the car and De Montezemolo criticising Alonso for criticising the car, which was big news because they never say bad things about Alonso. Never, ever, ever. It might be the first time since he joined that they have said anything bad about him.
But he doesn't normally say bad things about his car.
I mean, is the relationship falling apart? What's going on there?
Well, it's interesting that prior to the season, Alonso specifically said, we need to start the year with a really fast car because every season our championship has been hobbled by the fact that we're slower than our rivals and we have to ramp up development throughout the year. This year, the team started the year with a very fast car, exactly what the guy asked for, yet they've dropped off the pace. So how has that happened?
He wants a fast car and then for it to stay a fast car.
Of course! Of course, but that should be possible. If you're capable of ramping up your development and keeping, you know, and ending the year with a quick challenger, and then you start the year with a quick challenger, how can it possibly go wrong? I just don't understand what's wrong. Why is this team not quite getting it together? They're snatching defeat from the jaws of victory time after time.
You'd think by now, with all their experience, they might know how to put together a championship campaign.
You'd hope so, yes. And they've got Alisson coming in, which will be a major asset to them and should hopefully sort their aerodynamics out. But I can, you can see why Alonso is frustrated.
Was that quick enough for you?
No.
Okay.
Let's go quicker.
Even quicker. Another team.
We're still talking. Right. One more. That's very small writing. It's a very tiny, very distant Lotus.
Is that because they're so fast they're in the distance? No.
That's how far they are behind Red Bull, I think. That's what that is.
That would make more sense.
That's what Vettel sees in his rearview mirror. Have we got any non-news for Lotus?
The summer break non-news for Lotus. Kimi Raikkonen says being consistently in the points is all very well and good, but he needs to be winning to get anywhere near Vettel in the championship.
Doesn't he?
That's
just
all he ever says. I need to be winning. Meanwhile, Grosjean says he is better this year, even though it might not look like it. And also, he just had a baby. So wait for it. He has a baby grow.
Goodness me.
I've been waiting to say that.
That's terrible. So, okay, Kimi Raikkonen first. Wins are the only thing that's going to give him the championship. On the one hand, it's fantastic that Lotus, another team with a really small budget, and another team that have been surrounded by rumours relating to non-payment of staff, perhaps not to the extent that Sauber have been, but there seems to be some issues financially with that team. They are doing an amazing job of being second best to Red Bull. So credit to them. Really good. We've got someone who can almost challenge the Milton Keynes outfit. But on the other hand, if they finish the season where they currently are, that's not going to be good enough.
I can see why it's frustrating for Kimi, because he always seems to be the driver that is chasing down and then runs out of laps.
Mm. But he also is another guy like Vern, who just doesn't get it right on Saturday.
Mm.
Qualifying, I can't for the life of me remember whether that was always a problem with Kimi. I seem to think he was a decent qualifier in the past. Doesn't seem to be able to get it right during that final shootout on Saturday.
Pressure's on for one lap and he can't do it. But when he has a chance to get some strategy in and just put in lap after lap, then he's got the concentration to be able to do that.
And Lotus have got the tyre management sussed. With the recent Pirelli changes, you would have expected them to suffer. Doesn't seem to have been the case. They put on a great performance in Hungary. That track does tend to favour them. In the past, they've always gone reasonably well at that circuit. So that might be an anomaly. But you have to say, thus far, they haven't had the drop-off that we've seen from Force India. We still need more. And Grosjean, a great job at the last race. Can he keep it up? I mean, if Vern thought he had an inconsistent season, well, what did Grosjean think of his? Because it has been up and down and up and down. And when he's up, he's right up there. And when he's down, he's in the wall.
Yeah, I think it's starting to be a bit too much when you're the driver that gets investigated for something. And while the stewards are looking at that, you have to be investigated for something else. They haven't even finished looking at the first incident.
But the thing is, the most frustrating, genuinely the most frustrating moment of this season was Grosjean's amazing pass on Felipe Massa in Hungary, which he got penalised for, which was a ridiculous decision by the stewards. And after the race, I think even Massa turned around and said, I wouldn't have penalised him for that. Now, the guy who lost out in the fight never says, I wouldn't have penalised the driver, you know, my opponent for that manoeuvre.
Yeah.
And yet somehow Grosjean manages to lose out. Now, was that decision made because in the past he's aired so much that he's got the reputation? And now that when you're in a straight fight, you think, well, Massa's got the experience. He's normally decent in a two-way. Well, with the exception of his ongoing, seemingly never-ending fight with Lewis Hamilton, yes, actually. I mean, he's a trustworthy driver when you're going wheel-to-wheel with him. So perhaps the stewards looked at it and thought, well, it has to be somebody's fault, so we'll blame Grosjean. And you can see on the replays that Grosjean crossed the line and the rules are rules, but I thought it was a fair pass. I thought it was a great pass. One of the passes of the season. And they go and penalise it. But on the other hand, was it prior to or following that, there was the pass when he clumped Jenson Button, which was clumsy and awful and dreadful and totally deserved a penalty. And that was typical Grosjean. He puts on the move of the season in the same race that he puts on the worst move of the season. And that's him to a T. And I don't know how you can square that. Perhaps that, you know, with enough time, he'll smooth out those edges and there'll be a happy medium in the middle.
But, how long is enough time, though? Because obviously we have the Massa benchmark to compare him against, mm-hmm. in that he used to be crazy and crash all the time, mm-hmm. and is now apparently much better, according to you.
I think Massa, in the dry, I think Massa's a great race driver.
Yeah. But so how long do you give it? He's had a season and a half. He's still quite reckless and does seem to have some sort of spatial awareness issues. But how long can you develop those kind of skills?
Already, I would have probably dropped him, I think. But the fact that Lotus haven't dropped him, and presumably he must be bringing enough sponsorship or whatever that he's bringing to the team, that he's worth keeping around. And if you may be within a chance of losing Raikkonen, you might want to give him another year. Because when he's up, when he's, you know, you want those moments that, you know, he gets on the podium and does what you need him to do. You just need to do, you know, you need less mistakes. Hmm. And penalising him for things he hasn't done wrong is not the way to get the best out of him, but that's not what the stewards are there for.
No. No. I'm conflicted about Grosjean at the moment. But that wasn't a very quick conversation either.
Right, yeah.
This is, I think, our penultimate team.
Gotta be then. I don't know who's left. I should know this. Should be obvious. It is Mercedes.
Well, Mercedes are doing okay at the moment. It sort of feels like the whole tyre thing they got a benefit was offset by them not having the benefit of the test, and they're still doing okay.
So it didn't hurt them in Hungary.
It's all fine.
They missed out on the Silverstone test. Didn't hurt them in the slightest. Is there any Mercedes non-news? Because I think I caught something from Rosberg, who claims that he wasn't sure when the team should quit work on this year's car and focus solely on next year's car. Mercedes, we know, are going to have a major advantage because they've got the engine and the chassis. They're one of the teams that have got both ends of the equation for next year. You'd expect Mercedes to do really well in 2014. That is what Lewis Hamilton was banking on when he made the switch. He wasn't banking on a really good season in 2013. He's got one, but that's a bonus. So at some point, Mercedes have to focus on 2014 to fulfill that potential. But at the same time, they've got this really good car this year. So do you go all out now? Do you go all in?
Well,
for 2013?
Toto Wolff doesn't think they should go all in. He says they aren't hoping to win the championship this year and they should instead focus on consistent points finishes instead. Which seems that's a bit of a dampener, isn't it?
There was a team in recent memory that did exactly this. They had a great car and they won a race. And I think Robert Kubica won the race in the BMW. And he said, we should go all out and push this car this year because it's a damn fast car. And BMW said, no, we are sticking with the program.
It's a German.
We are sticking with the program. And the next year, that program was a complete and unmitigated disaster. And they should have done exactly what Kubica said and fight to the end of that season. And there are echoes potentially within Mercedes. And that could happen. Exactly the same thing could happen. You could focus on 2014. You squander this year and you've got nothing next year.
Also, Ross Brawn says that Rosberg's form compared to Lewis, meaning that he is quite good, shows that Schumacher wasn't that bad, really.
I don't care.
They were both
Do not give a stuff.
Form.
If Michael Schumacher was as good as Ross Brawn says Michael Schumacher was, why didn't he keep him? Because he wasn't that good.
Okay, I'm sorry I brought it up. Let's move on.
Oh my God.
Final team. Should know what this one is.
You can't fire a driver and anyway.
Tell us the team.
Caterham. Fire a driver and then say, by the way, he was really good, wasn't he? I told you so.
Do you want to know the summer break non-news for Caterham?
I'd love to.
There is none.
Oh, we'll end on a high.
They've done nothing. I didn't know Brilliant. You were gonna pull them out last.
Well done. Who scheduled this show? Caterham, I don't know if there's much we can add. They have underperformed.
Not much
again.
We can add to nothing.
Well, your opinions on them this season are valid. What do you think? They've underperformed, right? You want more.
Absolutely.
You expect more from Caterham.
Well, they were supposed to be, they really were supposed to be pushing for the points.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've said that many times over. But Marussia keep routinely beating them or fighting with them more than you would have thought. So, yeah, underperformed.
They are in danger of being beaten by Marussia this year for the first time. And so far as I can tell, haven't got an answer.
Even with Heikki back in the garage, doesn't seem to be making that much difference.
Do we think Vandergaard is going to make it to the end of the season? It's still looking tenuous.
Well,
I still can't tell.
It's hard to say. He does okay, but neither of those drivers are particularly special.
Meaning, pick
And yeah, the current drivers.
I think Pick's a good driver. I think he's okay. Vandegaard's got a lot to learn. But if you really do want to beat Marussia, because you need that 10th place, final 10th place position, you almost certainly have to bring Heike back. That to my mind is the only way they're gonna wrestle that position back from Marussia. It's got to be Heike. Heike or bust for Caterham.
If you remember back to the last show, if you can remember back that far.
It wasn't that long ago.
It was quite a long time ago. We were talking about the unfortunate incident in the Germany pit lane with the FOM cameraman injured, who he is very much on the mend now, which is good news. We were discussing whether what kind of things could fix that, whether you should have spotters in the pit lane or if FOM's solution of banning everyone and everything from the pit lane was any good or not.
It was a bit over the top.
And we had a message from an actual FOM cameraman who used to be in the pit lane, and he had experience on the ground. So this is from Brian Benjamin. He says, "Hi, Christine. Just listened to your recent Feet Up Friday podcast where you discussed the topic of cameramen, media in the pit lane in the wake of the recent accident. The reason for my email is that I worked for FOM from 1996 to 2001 as a cameraman, and my job was as a pit lane cameraman, so I speak now from experience of what it was like to work down there. Firstly, it's a pretty hostile environment to work in, and you really do have to be so aware of everything and everybody else around you. The idea of head protection is in principle a great idea, but in reality it's totally impractical, as you both mentioned in the podcast, this being due to modern camera design. The ear defender headphones we currently use are only just about usable with modern cameras. The idea of a spotter is, in my opinion, a great idea. When I started in 96, we used to use analog radio link cameras, which required a man to be with the cameraman. His job was to carry a small microwave transmitter on the end of a long pole. You were attached by an umbilical cord, so as well as being responsible for making sure the radio link was sending its pictures, he was, in effect, your second pair of eyes or spotter, and for me, on more than one occasion, pulled me out of the way of a major accident."
Yep. You can see why you would want that. I mean, when you've got a camera, imagine these great big heavy cameras. You've got to hold them over your shoulder. You're balancing this huge weight. You're concentrating on, you know, you're looking down the viewfinder. You're focusing on one thing and only one thing. You just need somebody else who's not as in the zone as a cameraman needs to be, just to be aware of things that are going on around them. Filming these things, it just takes an awful lot. It takes a lot of brain power to do that. And just, that's what you need. You just need somebody else. And that's a far more constructive, I mean, it's more expensive for FOM and for Bernie to put more people in the pit lane. And you might argue that actually adding more bodies to an already overcrowded area possibly isn't the most logical idea, but actually having a second pair of eyes is a good plan. If you were to go to Side Podcast and check out this post, there's also some great comments in that thread from, I think, from JM and Simon and others who are also cameramen and who are also have pit lane experience. So there's a wealth of knowledge there from people who are in that environment. And it really opened my eyes hearing from Brian and from the others just how difficult it is to be doing that job. And I think the next time I see the Formula One coverage in the pit lane, I'll look at it differently, because now, you know, this, that kind of insight is, it's fantastic, and I'll never really sort of see it the same. One thing that has come to my mind since, actually, that might, it may not help this situation, but it might be a bit of an alternate solution, is cycling helmets tend to be more on top than down the sides. And I wonder if you took a fall, a cycling helmet might at least give you a little bit of head protection, or if something clunked you on the head. That might be, you know, that might be the kind of thing that would, that's sort of the thing you need, like, research into actual head protection for cameramen. And I bet nobody's ever done that, because, you know, there's a very, very small market for it. But that's the kind of thing you need. Somebody who actually spends some time and some money and to figure out the best way to either change the shape or design of cameras, or provide some kind of protection for people who are exposed in the way that motorsport cameramen are.
Yeah, Brian finished up his message saying, "Head protection is a great idea and would have prevented a serious head injury, but a loose wheel travelling at 60 to 70 miles per hour will poleaxe anybody.
Yeah, it will,
be very interesting to see what kind of pit lane coverage we see in Hungary," he said, because they were filming from the pit wall in Hungary. And actually, I didn't really notice any difference, but I think it sort of made more of a difference that they'd banned all the media and the journalists, and a big fuss was kicked up about that.
I did see, I know Ted made a big deal of it. He was standing behind a knee-high barrier and was, you know, he made a fuss that he, you know, he was no better protected because clearly it's a knee-high barrier.
Yeah.
And he's a tall bloke. But he was complying with the regulations, but still provided close-up action. So it wasn't a huge, it wasn't a major loss. We weren't, you know, completely removed from the action. But there weren't the close-up. When cars come out of the pitch, you sometimes get those 360 rolling shots and stuff where cameramen are right on the ground. We didn't get so much of that. Which I think was
also, it seems like, I mean, Formula One is supposed to be a really good place for research and things to be pushed forward like that. And why not do it for this part of safety as well, even if it's not directly related to the racing?
It's the kind of thing that the FIA could look into if they were interested in doing so, and if they have the money to do that. That would be their area of interest. It's not the kind of thing that I can imagine Bernie giving much of a stuff about, sadly. You know, he just moves them out of the way, and as long as, you know, fair enough, he's got his cameraman sort of out of harm's way, to one side anyway. He's put his cameraman to one side, and he scored it a day. That was Bernie's token effort for you, for the safety of his staff. Stand over there.
You mentioned there were comments on the thread of Brian's message, because we bundled that up into a blog post on the site. And we've had some new commenters on the site recently, and it's been brought to our attention that those who listen to the podcast may not really be aware of everything going on at sidepodcast.com, may not really be visiting the website and seeing the awesome writing, the awesome community, and everything that goes on there. So we're just flagging it up now. Go to sidepodcast.com and have a look around.
There's loads. There are two different audiences, clearly. We have the listeners, and then we have the people who listen and go to SciPodcast. And there should be, you know, everybody should do everything. Should take part in all of SciPodcast. Listen to the shows, read the posts, join the community, take part. That's what you want. I mean, Jen did say in the comments that she'd been listening for about 6 months and then decided to look at the website.
I think it was because...
That's too long.
Yeah, well, I think it was because of the mention of the camp last time. I mentioned that we were doing a side pod camp, 2 weeks to fill the summer break, and we are almost at the end of that camp now. And it's been a lot of fun and a lot of activities and blog things going on that you wouldn't know about if you only listened to the podcast, because we're only just talking about it now.
If you only listen to this podcast, you must wonder what the hell we do all year, because we only put out like 8 or 9. You must think these guys are lazy. They're so lazy. There's so much going on Side Podcast. You've been working so very hard on Side Pod Camp. I'm so impressed with the creativity. It's been amazing to watch.
The camp was slightly harder work than I thought it might be. A little bit more effort went into that than I had been anticipating.
You've had quizzes. You've had science experiments. There's been music nights. There's been reminiscing. There's been all the things you would normally expect from a real camp, only this one is online and virtual. And I haven't been around to take part in all of it.
There's been a newsletter every day.
Has there?
Yeah.
Daily camp news.
Yeah.
I haven't been around to take part in all of it, but I have enjoyed watching it from a distance. It seems like it's so much fun and so much enjoyment and such a great community spirit.
It has been a lot of fun. But, you know, I put a lot of effort into this, and it's sort of like the last thing I'm going to be able to put a lot of heaps of effort into for a while in terms of Side Podcast.
Because you're retiring.
I'm not retiring.
You're leaving us.
I'm not hanging up my podcast hat.
Your headphones?
No, I'm not hanging them up. But I do have to sort of get a bit serious, because I did this silly thing like sign up for loads of exams to do with my career for the foreseeable future.
What, real life stuff?
Lots and lots of hard work. That doesn't involve Formula One, which is a shame. But I, in my optimistic fashion, I don't actually see that much changing in terms of, like, we'll still be doing podcasts and we'll still be writing stuff on the site and that. What I do think it is a chance for everyone else to get their name in lights. And where Christine is too busy studying, we're going to take over. That's what I think is going to happen.
It sounds like you're volunteering people.
Kind of.
To do what? Write posts?
Anything they want.
Phone in?
Yes.
Do lots of communication things.
We do have a phone number, 012128 track. That's 012128872225. We don't mention it very often, but there it is. I just think that we keep talking about guest writers and the feature writers, and now is a really good time to step up, and we'll help you every step of the way. If you think, oh, I would like to contribute something, but I don't really know what, I don't have an idea for a post, we have heaps of ideas. We can help you out. All you need is the enthusiasm, really, and we can help you with everything else.
Your podcast needs you like never before. This isn't going to take you a lifetime, but you're going to be otherwise preoccupied for a period. And if people would like to submit guest posts and things to cover that period, that would be most appreciated. I will be doing some more writing because I haven't done very much recently. You've been doing an awful lot. But if anybody else out there has got the writing bug, you know, you're loving Formula One this year, you're thinking there's so much, so much is going on, and these guys, they're not talking about the things in Formula One that I care about. This is your chance. Come along, write things, phone in, discuss things.
It doesn't even have to be specifically like heaps of writing, because we have things like the collections. You could gather together things you've noticed around the web or whatever you feel like doing. I think we can accommodate it.
We can definitely accommodate it. So when are you going away? Is this like D-Day?
I'm not retiring or anything like that. I think you put it very well. I'm not taking a massive step back. I'm just going to be preoccupied for quite a long time to come.
You are so selfish.
I know. These damn careers having to work for a living.
Did you not think of side podcasts for one minute? You'll be fine. You'll be great. I bet, actually, because you're doing less of the things that normally take up your time, you'll be more keen to get away from the exams and to do some podcasts. And there'll probably be even more podcasts from side podcasts as a result of it. It's going to be good. I'm looking forward to the rest of this season. There's an awful lot of races to come in a very short space of time.
We're going to pack them in.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bernie is. And we will attempt to cover them as best we can. You're still going to be doing the race coverage, right? Because that's pretty awesome.
Fact by fact boxing every single race this year. I have done so far. I intend to do every single one. It's going to be brilliant. And I am
loving that coverage.
I hope everyone follows the coverage, sidepodcast.com. It's usually on the homepage when we do it. And joining in the live comments, because that's another thing that happens on the website every race and, well, every session, actually. There's a great community of people sharing their predictions and their thoughts and their outrage when people get penalised when they shouldn't, or outrage when people aren't penalised when they should be. There's lots of great stuff.
It all makes for an ideal second screen experience. So if you're watching your TV, if you're tuning in and you're following the race live, make sure that on another device, be it a laptop or a tablet or a phone, you've got Side Podcast open and you're following along and or joining in.
Depending on when you listen to this show, the next Fact Bite Fact Box and live threads will be about a week away, because that's when the Belgian Grand Prix is on. I can't believe the summer break is over already.
It's been and it's gone, much like this show.